See cleaner malware targets big companies, Equifax falls for phishing techniques, a car tracking service leaks data, and IR lights on security cameras could spill confidential information. All that coming up now on ThreatWire. Greetings! I am Shannon Morris, and this is ThreatWire for September 26, 2017, your summary of the threats to our security, privacy, and internet freedom. If you haven't checked out our Patreon yet, please do so. We have lots that we want to do for the show, but we can't do it without your support. Patreon.com/ThreatWire is the place to support ThreatWire, and the link is in the show notes. So first off, on Wednesday of last week, Cisco Talos posted updated information on their blog about research they were doing into the CCleaner malware debacle. Cisco Talos determined upon further research that the command and control server that the CCleaner malware was calling back to was actually trying to send a second stage payload to 18 different companies, possibly more, where several different machines were further infected. The companies included Singtel, HTC, Samsung and Sony, VMware, Intel, Microsoft, Cisco themselves, Linksys, and D-Link, just to name a few. Cisco believes this targeted attack was to steal intellectual property and intended for industrial espionage. Some of these companies had more than one computer compromised, and in total, the dragnet of computers infected included over 700,000 PCs. Now, while this is less than the initial number of 2.27 million that Avast said, it is still substantial and it speaks volumes to problems with supply chain attacks. Cisco has alerted the companies that were compromised. The company also found code in the malware that was leaked to a hacking group called Group 72 or Axiom, known to work with the Chinese government, but they also explained that this is not enough proof for attribution. This hacking group has been around for over a decade and they have been running high-profile attacks against industry and political organizations themselves. Avast went further and they updated their blog to indicate that at least 40 companies at those big brand tech companies were infected with the second stage payload and alerted the companies as well to the issue. Now in this case, the code used anti-debugging and anti-emulation to hide itself along with a third stage payload that hit the computer's memory. This means that the malware is never written to a storage medium, which also makes it really hard to trace and research. Avast also released public data on which companies had infected computers and how many in each of those brands. Unfortunately, though, it seems that Cisco could have had even more information on the attacks if the attackers had not been saving data to a low-end server. So according to Avast, information saved by attacks before September 12th about machines that were attacked was corrupted and it ran out of space, so it was deleted entirely by the attackers instead of them just going in and fixing it. Now, because of the seriousness, experts are now recommending that affected machines revert back to a backup version of your machine from before installation of the infected CCleaner version. If you're unsure if yours was infected or not, check my last episode of ThreatWire where I explain exactly which versions and which kind of computers were infected. Oh, Equifax. In a report published by the Wall Street Journal, a confidential note sent by FireEye to some Equifax customers stated that attackers had first interacted with the network on March 10th, 4 months before the intrusion was detected and half a year before it was publicly disclosed. This does make sense given that the Apache Struts flaw was also being exploited around that time. Mandiant, which is owned by FireEye, detected 35 IP addresses tied to the attackers and determined that they were using around 30 web shells to gain administrative privileges on targeted machines. It sounds like this is part of the current attack and is separate from the previously reported hack in which Equifax's TallX payroll division was hacked between April 2016 and March 2017. Now, furthermore, a security researcher created a fake Equifax site called securityequifax2017.com, which is not equifaxsecurity2017.com, and then they tricked the Equifax Twitter account into posting it. So the security researcher did this to show how easy it is to trick a company into clicking on an imposter site. Nick Sweeting, the security researcher and the site's creator, used it as an example of phishing, which we all know very well. Now, while we previously reported that the Canadian Office of the Privacy Commissioner was planning on some recourse, it seems that they cannot do much because they can only take a reactive approach to investigations and make recommendations. The OPC cannot currently regulate privacy in Canada. As such, the OPC stated in their annual report that they need to be able to enforce legislation for Canadians, including fines and audits. And lastly, in relation to Equifax, users finally started receiving a sign-up link for Trusted ID via email, but the link available in the email was flagged as a phishing site on some browsers when it started showing up, potentially because it was so new. The site was being called TrustedIDPremier.com, and unfortunately, Equifax had also registered TrustedID.com, and as such, the email looks super obviously like a phishing scam. Now, since TrustedID is a child company of Equifax, it has its own terms of service and its policies, so the sign up could not be hosted on the same Equifax.com site. If you do choose to sign up with the TrustedID credit lock or fraud alert service, take the additional step to freeze your credit as well, which will stop any potential attacks from opening new lines of credit in your name. Is nothing safe? Well, no, not when a company is storing data on a publicly available Amazon S3 server. Tale as old as time. Yeah, so Cromtech Security Center discovered a repository of data on over 500,000 accounts that included ID numbers, license plates, VIN numbers, emails, hash passwords, IMEI numbers, and more. This belonged to SVR Tracking, which is a company that monitors and recovers vehicles for customers via GPS devices attached to cars. These devices obtain information for location via satellite, and then they send it to the user's account over the web. It can obviously be used to monitor where your car is at any given time, but it can also be used to recover it if it gets stolen. The device location on the physical car was also included for some strange reason in the data leak as well. SVR Tracking tracks cars for the last 120 days, which could have some really dire privacy consequences for users. Now, if the hashed password part makes it sound like it could have saved the day, it actually didn't. Yeah, passwords were hashed using SHA-1, which is old, and it's easily cracked. The company secured the private data on the server, but they have not released a statement, and it is not clear whether or not the data was accessed by attackers. Security researchers at Ben-Gurion University posted findings in a detailed report explaining how malware called AirJumper could be used to infiltrate air-gapped networks and send data in and out via security cameras and infrared LED lights. This would allow an attacker access to data on internal networks covertly. AirJumper would already need to be installed on the target computer, potentially by a USB flash drive, for example, with the malware hidden on it, and the target would need to be within range of an internet-facing security camera on the network. Now, if those conditions were met, the malware targets the camera's API to send data over LED via these little blinking patterns. The data is turned into ones and zeros, which are then turned into flashes of light, which then can be decoded to the original data. Now, since IR LEDs are not viewable to the human eye without some kind of technical device like your phone, it would be simple to send this data without being caught. The researchers also gave an example of an attacker sending an IR LED data back to the security camera, which would then send data to the network, compromising any devices on said network. They suggested being able to do this from a mile away. Now, luckily, it would require very specific conditions to be met to actually work, but if you are worried, a company could set up detection for malware on their IR LED cameras. Or they could also do detection at the network level, monitoring traffic from those surveillance cameras. I want to send huge thanks and a huge shout out to Michael, Eric, Corey, and the Cascadian Beer Podcast, which I checked out your podcast. It's super cool. They are also on Patreon if anybody wants to support them, for sending in your stories via the Patreon community tab for this week. I really appreciate the links. And while I wasn't able to get to all of the different stories on this episode, I think that it's great that we have a place where we can share news related to security and privacy. Thanks again to everyone who contributes to patreon.com/threatwire. You are the reason that we can keep on bringing you news every single week. We are on our way to the next goal, which I'm super excited about. This allows me to upgrade some of our equipment for the set, as well as open up a live video Q&A just for patrons, each and every one of you, every single month. I've also updated our Patreon page with more details about costs associated with running ThreatWire, since I got a question about that previously. Any little bit helps us grow the show, and in return, you will get access to a bunch of extras on Patreon, as usual. We might even feature your fur baby, just like these ones, in an upcoming episode, so make sure to check out the perk levels on Patreon, and thank you again so much for supporting the show. You keep it going completely independent and ad-free, and if you can't donate, subscribe, hit that little like button, and share it on social media. And with that, I'm Shannon Morse, and I will see you on the internet.
Thank you.